Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noll. Today we're going to talk about how greater antioxidant activity can help prevent glaucoma. University of Copenhagen, published in the Journal of Clinical Medicine. Now we know that we're getting good antioxidant activities when our omega-3 levels are high. These are the chemical messengers in the body among individuals that believe to be at risk. When those are low, your risk is higher. In fact, the main risk factor for primary open-angle glaucoma is increased intraocular pressure. When you're taking vitamin C, that decreases. Vitamin E, it decreases. So your antioxidants are essential. And that's important. That's just the first of many articles we're going to talk about today. I have a guest in the second part of our program, Gerald Salante. We're going to look at the economic outlook during the corona pandemic leading up to the elections. And as always, Gerald is going to have some extremely insightful looks. He's a true New Yorker. So, and he has the best Trends Research Institute. It's up in Kingston, New York. He publishes the Trends Journal that has been in publication since 1980. And more often than not, his predictions are right. So, we'll see what he has to say. In between the health and Gerald, I'm going to start providing a form for those who've been erased, marginalized, scrubbed from any public forms, thrown out of academia. For what? What was their sin? They spoke the truth. These are not radicals. These are not rebels. These are almost all, not all of them, but most politically come from a very liberal perspective. Today, you're going to hear from one considered the most liberal professor and the most liked professor at Evergreen State College, but he lost his job based upon the mob, the woke mob. I just came across an interview that a young English broadcaster had with him. It's an hour long. We're going to play segments, but I'm going to do something a little different. As he is talking, when he makes an extremely important comment, whether I agree or disagree, I'm going to give you my perspective on that. So I'm going to be talking back to what he is saying. So we're going to hear from him on today's show vis-a-vis an interview that he did. And he is Professor Brett Weinstein. So it's called Racism Has Been Redefined. Some extremely interesting insights. So that's our program. It is packed. Let's go immediately to health and healing. So take your antioxidants. Each day, eat a lot of antioxidant-rich food. There's your fruits and vegetables. And your juices, triple the amount, because what's a juice? It's 96 to 98% water. What's left? Those are the phytonutrients, and important other nutrients like chlorophylls that give the food its color and some fiber. So we need more of that in our diet. Now, a new study out of the University of Auckland, which is New Zealand, talks about black currant. Now, black currant you can eat, but they're bitter, and they only come once a year. But you can get black currant concentrate, and that's good because it's rich in antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S. And they increase what is called cyclic glycine proline in the cerebrospinal fluid of Parkinson's patients. So what this means in lay language is there's a new scientific discovery down in New Zealand that black currants have high levels of a key brain nutrient. This is one of those unique discoveries, and that key brain nutrient is insulin-like growth factor 1 proline, or CGP. It's a very important brain nutrient that normalizes the insulin-like growth factor 1, or IGF-1, function of a hormone that is key to total body health and wellness. So it is one of the things that can slow down the aging process. So black currants are really healthy. And I realize it's a little complicated, but I'll try to put the best approach to understanding it, insulin-like growth factor 1, or IGF-1, function is impaired in Parkinson's disease. Cyclic glycine proline, a metabolite of IGF-1, is neuroprotective through improving IGF-1 function. Parkinson's disease patients score lower on hospital-associated anxiety and depression scale after supplementing black currant anthocyanidins, and that's associated with the IGF-1 function. So it works. In simple lay language, if you have Parkinson's disease, you may want to consider just one more piece to the puzzle, taking black currant concentrate. All right, it's that simple. And from Imperial College London, published in the British Medical Journal Open, they're saying that we have to have a whole new mindset about cannabis products for medicinal use, because there's so much good science showing how they help alleviate a patient's pain. Research found that hundreds of thousands of UK patients were self-medicating with illegal cannabis-based products for medicinal use due to the fact that much of the medical and pharmaceutical professions have so far not embraced and prescribed legal cannabis-based products. We really need the legalization to start worldwide and then have pharmaceutical-grade cannabinoids so that they're safe, and what potency you're supposed to get, you actually get. And also, you can smoke all the marijuana you want, and it will ease slightly the pain, but you don't want the pharmacological effects without the psychological effects, because marijuana smoking also can increase lung cancer. Regular use can cause delusional psychosis with paranoia. I've seen it repeatedly, including two of my close friends. They literally, heavy smokers, always mellowed out, and then one day they were paranoid. And then about 6 months later, they were acting out. One of their sons, mind you, this is one of my best friends, his son called me and said, you know, what's going on with my dad? He is just nuts. I mean, he's just out of control. And it was because of the heavy use of the marijuana. Now, at that time, I was a senior research fellow as a scientist in the Institute of Plant Biology, so I pulled together all the scientific literature, every single study. And sure enough, and it's different for each person, but for those who are heavy users, you step over lime one day, and your brain chemistry is going to be affected in such a way that you're going to be in a chronic state of hyper-anxiety. You're going to burn out. Now, you can detoxify from that. In fact, I was able to successfully detox one of my friends. But it's a rigorous program. It takes about a year. And during that year, a person's behavior is just off the walls. So for those who say, yeah, legalize is fine. I support that. Get rid of all the people's records in prison for drug use. Cleanse and expunge that so they can reenter society. But also understand there's a big difference between smoking marijuana, which medically I'm completely opposed to, not legally, not ethically, I know what it does in the body, versus taking the chemicals out of that and then putting them in a place where it is not addictive, has no psychological effect, but is really important. It can help stop seizures. It can help with lung cancer. It can help with brain tumors, glioblastomas, so many things that are good. But we've got to get over that first hurdle of legalizing it and get rid of the stigma. In fact, we should legalize all drugs. The war on drugs is a massive failure. It has created over 1 million deaths just in Mexico alone since the war on drugs hit hard there about 15 years ago. There's at least 200,000 deaths, and those are gruesome deaths. So what comes from our failed wars on poverty, wars on terrorism, more terrorists? Everything we do ends up as its opposite. So that's just something we should deal with. In any case, there's good news if you go to the cannabinoids, even if your dog can help with seizures. Also from the hospital Del Mar, Barcelona in Spain, they found that you should have higher levels of zinc to meet your body requirements because low levels of zinc in the blood are associated with an increased risk of death in patients with COVID-19. Now, this is why I was talking about a preventative program that is natural, non-toxic, could help people with all forms of illness because your immune system is stronger and better able to, either if you're sick, less severe, or to prevent it altogether. And younger people have stronger immune systems, so they have high levels of T cells able to attack the virus and destroy it. The trouble is, and everything we're doing is wrong, every single thing we're doing, there's not a single thing we're doing right now about COVID-19. We're causing massive death. You know, everyone, 200,000 dead, 200,000 dead, 200,000 dead. These people are functional idiots. In my opinion, the New York Times and all these people should be ashamed of themselves because they're taking this as pure propaganda. Now, here's what you should do. If you're a real journalist, you simply look at the figure, okay, 200,000 dead. Now, how many would normally die in the United States, for example, of more or less around 3 million in a normal year? Did we have greater number? Well, no. All right, who are these people who are dying? Well, take the first big group is the people in nursing homes, assisted living, in hospice care, and in critical care. They were dying no matter what. So, can you really honestly say that someone who died in a nursing home with terminal cancer died because of COVID, even if they tested positive? Remember, COVID-19 antibody tests cannot screen you for an old virus that was dead and not harmful to the body, just a particulate matter in there that has been amplified times 40 times, to where they can actually see a tiny little particle, but it's not harmful to anyone. And so they list that as a COVID death. Take all the autopsies that were not done. Well, then you're going to reduce the 200,000 deaths by at least 70%. Well, now you're not at 200,000 dead because of COVID. You're substantially less. So then compare that to a flu. Well, the flu will kill young kids, toddlers, school children. It's very deadly. Well, this isn't. So why are you being punitive? Because there's profit. You see, you haven't seen anything yet. You've merely seen the panic and the stigma and the draconian measures. What comes next is going to be far worse. Let me put it this way. On a scale of 1 to 100, what's going to be happening to us right now is about a 10. What's going to really be bad is forced testing with a faulty test that will not determine anything of value, not sequestering people who are terminally ill and giving them the type of end-of-life care they deserve and should have, and of course, and most importantly, giving people a way of helping their immune systems now with either a natural approach, vitamin D, vitamin C, building up your immune system, which will help, or giving them hydroxychloroquine combinations in low doses based upon doctor prescription, generally 200 to 400 milligrams once or twice a day, depending upon the doctor. And people are not dying from that. People are first responders in medicine, the nurses, doctors, emergency room doctors, pulmonologists. That's when you help a patient in the first 7 days. Giving a high dose to a patient at the end of their stay in a hospital increased their death. So why would you only take the worst figures given in the wrong conditions and with a wrong outcome? Because you have an agenda. You want to get the vaccines, because then comes mandatory vaccines, and then comes tracking, mandatory tracking, and then comes the reading, the chips. You can't get on an airplane. You can't go across the state. You can't do a lot of stuff. They can literally shut down your life, and they have total control over you, the Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci's. So that's what's coming. So you think it's bad? We have seen nothing that's bad compared to how bad it's going to get. And then Ford and Bush Sr., utterly corrupt. Bush Jr., just as bad. And Bill Clinton and Barack Obama and Trump, they're all the same. They don't live with the average person. No, they're in that rarefied air. And they haven't done a single thing, not a single thing, to change the outcome for the average person. So one day the average person is filled with anger and rage and doesn't know what to do. But you can't do anything because you've got a police state now. They can seize your assets with asset forfeiture. You have no rights. The justice system is purely political. If you're Julian Assange, you'll spend the rest of your life in prison for a crime you did not commit. If you're the crime creators, the CIA, the FBI, the Deep State, National Intelligence Agency, major corporations, you don't get charged, let alone have any time to do. So it's an open door to the rich and powerful to loot and pillage, and they do. Income inequality is the highest level it's ever been in world history in any country in the world. We have a small group of very rich. We have a professional class that's modestly rich, and we have everyone else that's poor or very poor. And nothing's being done, not a single thing on 50 issues, not reversing Glass-Steagall, not getting rid of Citizens United, not taking money out of politics, not challenging the media for its biases, not taking away the indemnification on social media platforms so they'll be responsible for misinformation and libel like Facebook and Wikipedia and Google. No, nothing, not a single thing can you show me that's being done to help the average person. Yet everybody is involved out there in the political arena of wanting more power so they can virtue shame other people and then go right back to the book burnings. They were book burning books out in Portland. Book burnings, wow, Germany, 1932-33. Censoring, yeah. Condemning, yeah. Virtue signaling, all of them. And self-righteous contempt for open and free dialogue. No freedom of speech for you because your speech doesn't align with me. One of the biggest problems facing us today, of course, is global warming and inequality. The rich have more than ever before. The rest of us have less. There's 66 million Americans, the most in our history, who are hungry. They're food insecure. Yet we have no plans of feeding them. We have homeless at a record rate, even greater than the Great Depression. But we have no federal plans to create housing that they could have a quality of life in. But more essential at this moment, according to the media, the general media, is racism. And I'm very concerned because what is happening is the racial issue has been weaponized. Yes, we have had institutional racism in the past. Remember, the Democratic Party was the creator of the Ku Klux Klan. And they were the party that ensured that any escaped slave would be brought back. So it's not as if one party was better than the other when it comes to dealing with this. In fact, when you look back towards Ronald Reagan till today, that means Ronald Reagan, Gerald Ford, George Bush Sr., Jr., the Clintons, Obama, and Trump, I have not seen any of those individuals create a better life for the majority of people who are at the bottom scale of our class system. And we do have a class system, unfortunately. So now what is happening is that there is a new book. It's a bestseller. It's being used in schools, and it's being used to indoctrinate people into a new philosophy that if you're born Caucasian, you're evil, and you can never outgrow it, no matter what good deeds you do. This is as irrational as Mein Kampf, written back in the 1920s, I think 1922, when Hitler was in jail, and his person who was helping was Rudolf Hess, who became the deputy Führer later. So he was saying that all the problems of Germany, in fact, much of the world, was due to ethnicity, in this case, the Jews. It didn't happen overnight. They didn't have Mein Kampf and the next day build concentration camps. It first took an indoctrination process. It took taking more or less 50 million Germans and convincing them that all their problems could be solved with a strong hand of a leader like Adolf Hitler. And all the problems were due to the Jews. Well, of course, that's insane. And we can look back and say, well, how did all these people get killed? All these concentration camps. It wasn't just Adolf Eichmann who created that system. But it was a mindset demeaning the quality and sacredness of one ethnicity and the superiority of another. Do we have a reawakening from the woke generation of a new of a new ethnicity being hated. And what is the basis of that? We need to have discussions. Unfortunately, the people willing to discuss it openly and honestly without political or ideological or racial bias have been shunned, deplatformed, erased, fired, attacked, destroyed. So where's our freedom of speech? We have book burnings now occurring out in Oregon. My goodness. And exactly how does book burnings and censoring people's speech, if you disagree with them, how is that helping to be conducive to conciliation and forgiveness and bringing people together? It doesn't. It does just the opposite. There's a person who has had to deal with this. He is but one of many. He is Professor Brett Weinstein. He was considered the most liberal and loved professor at his university until he was attacked. And even the administration agreed with the attackers, which they shouldn't have, and he was thrown out. He's doing a podcast with a young gentleman from England who does a very admirable job asking very salient points. Whether you agree or disagree, in part or whole, it's important that we have a forum to allow these voices to be spoken. Otherwise, we'll only have one side of a story, one agenda, that for power, and the consequences could be horrific. I'm not suggesting concentration camps, detention camps. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that take a look in 1933 when Hitler ascended to power and the book burnings and then the stores being closed and Jews being excluded from universities, no free speech. We have a lot of that going on today. Let us stop this madness before it accelerates to where we cannot control the outcome. Now to Brett Weinstein.
The problem is that they have redefined the term racism. And in fact, if you listen to them, what they tell you will suggest that, of course, I automatically would be a racist by virtue of my skin color. In fact, it's an incurable condition.
To get Brexit.
Make America great again.
No, no, no.
Hello, this is Stephen Edgington for The Sun, and today I'm interviewing Brett Weinstein. Brett Weinstein is a US academic, biologist, and evolutionary theorist. He's also part of what's called the intellectual dark web. We're going to be talking all about the woke movement, Black Lives Matter, the US election, and evolutionary theory. Brett, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you're part of what's called the intellectual dark web, which is a really interesting bunch of intellectuals on YouTube and online. Can you explain how you joined that incident in Evergreen in 2017 that sort of brought you to mainstream providence? What happened?
Well, so one does not join the intellectual dark web. It's an informal designation that has been applied to me, to my wife, to Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, Joe Rogan, and quite a number of others. The term was coined by my brother, Eric Weinstein. The event that catalyzed public awareness of me was a meltdown at the college where I was teaching. I had been teaching there for 14 years. I was very popular with students. And in 2017, there was a set of proposals advancing through the college architecture that basically equity and diversity proposals that, as they were formulated, were a terrible threat to the college's ability to continue to function. And as a faculty member, it was my obligation to help govern the college, and I pointed out how dangerous these proposals were, and that caused me to be branded a racist, and some agitators at the school created a protest. 50 students who I had never met showed up at my class and demanded my firing or my resignation. The protests quickly descended into riots. The president of the college stood down the campus police force and allowed students to patrol with weapons in what they called community patrols, but what were really a bullying group that actually confronted other students. In one case, a student was battered. In other cases, students were intimidated. And these events were all filmed and uploaded to YouTube, which brought a tremendous amount of attention to the meltdown and to my role as the lightning rod at the center of it.
What happened to those students? Because it's an interesting question. Those students probably aren't stupid. I mean, all around the world, you've seen thousands of these, what I would call kind of woke, you know, far left activists rise up, especially in 2020. Over in the UK, there's a whole bunch of students from the Black Lives Matter protests at Oxford University, who some of which have said some of the most abhorrent things about white people. You know, they're basically Marxists. These people aren't idiots, but somehow they got to a point where they felt like shouting at you, someone who is a progressive, that you're racist. So how did they basically, in my view, become radicalized?
Well, there are two questions there. One is what happened to them after they did this, and the other is how did they get where they are? And I think the story of how they got where they are is similar everywhere. And that is to say, there are a small number of bad actors. There are another group of people who are confused by issues in the present moment. And the two things combine to create an attractive force. And what people don't seem to understand about this movement is that although what it declares, what it says it believes, is incredibly foolish, and what it proposes is incredibly dangerous, the strategy that causes it to spread is incredibly smart. And so by creating a dynamic in which anybody who expresses skepticism of the movement is targeted, it incentivizes people to adopt. And then once they've adopted it, those people rationalize these beliefs. So obviously wrongheaded ideas are spreading like wildfire because people are effectively afraid to acknowledge that they don't agree. And once they've failed to acknowledge it, the rest is done internally by a rationalization process. As for what happened to the students, that's an interesting story. The college pretended that they were disciplined, which is not the case. The college played a shell game where it took a lot of disciplinary matters that had nothing to do with the protests and riots and pretended that they had been responsive to them. One of the students, in fact, the ringleader of the movement, somebody who was involved not only in bullying fellow students and organizing the protest at my classroom, but somebody who actually kidnapped on videotape administrators of the college and arranged to have them held against their will, even to the point that the president of the college was unable to go to the bathroom on his own. He had to have an escort to make sure, I guess, that he didn't escape. But in any case, that student was hired the summer after the riots to help rewrite the student code of conduct. He was actually paid by the college to help write the rules for the rest of the student body, which tells you something about just how crazy this movement is and how far people who are trying to ingratiate themselves will go in order to stay in its good graces.
And what happened to you? I know that you spoke in front of Congress after this incident and you launched a lawsuit against the college. Can you talk about the impact it's had on your academic career in the last 3 years?
Well, that's an interesting question. I did testify in front of Congress, and the events brought a great deal of attention to me. So I have started a podcast, the Dark Horse Podcast, which is quite successful, and I've been invited to speak all over the world. The academic part of my life has been severely interrupted. In fact, most colleges would have very little to do with me because they are, of course, concerned that the stigmas that were leveled at me will be leveled at them. The one exception has been Princeton University, where the James Madison program has brought me and my wife on as visiting fellows. So we're very grateful to them for their courage.
This is a one-hour discussion. We only played you a segment. We have four more segments to play, and tomorrow we'll play you part two. Nice to have you with us, everyone. On the phone now is our friend and colleague and a person that's always in the front of the battle. He's one of those social issue first responders. He runs into the crisis that we're facing to take on those who feel that they are all powerful, have all the rights, and we have none. Gerald Salante. Gerald, nice to have you with us today.
No, it's great being on, and thank you for all that you do. And I love being on PRN. And everyone listening, please do what you can to support Progressive Radio Network, especially at this time when it's so hard to get any kind of information that isn't biased and outright propaganda.
I was just doing an analysis. I just did a history lesson for the last, let's say, last 20 minutes, trying to show people that we should take a look at history to see, are we duplicating any of it, or at least some of it? And I used Germany as the example from 1920, when Hitler came to power with his little party, to 1940, when the major concentration camp Auschwitz was being constructed. But the big part was in the early 1930s, 1932, 33, when they took power. He became chancellor, and then Führer, and then the book burnings, and then the denigration. And mind you, that today is happening in this sense. We're book burning today. We're tearing down institutions today. We're not building a better world. We're trying to demean the world that we have as if we've made no progress. Lots to do, but unless you stop, you're going to run into people who are going to say enough is enough, and then you're going to have your confrontations. And when those confrontations come, it's going to be a mess, and it'll come not at the racial level. It'll come at the cultural level, because we're challenging cultures, we're challenging ethnicity. So when you say everyone that's white is evil, and then you blame them for everything, no matter what, you're getting people who may be poor, maybe have never had a wealthy person, gone to college or anything, their whole family, they're saying, wait a second, we fought in the Civil War, we fought in World War I, World War II, my family. And they're going to say this, and people say, we don't care. And that reminds me of how bad it can get when you take away what is sacred in another human being, and you don't see them as a sacred person, you see them as an object of hate, and you take your hatred to the level of violence, emotional violence, or physical, or both. Tell us what you think and what you're observing with the phenomenon of what's happening in our society today, where everything is being weaponized by different groups for political, economic, and ideological power. The forum is yours.
Well, you summed it up perfectly. We're in the divided states of America. This is no longer the USA. It's the USSA, the United Soviet States of America. If you don't do what I tell you to do, you have no right to your freedom. I'll tell you what to do. The political parties, I mean, it's, you know, they're two gangs. They're murderers and thieves. It's like this election, people voting for a lesser of two evils. And they actually say that and defend themselves by saying that. Oh, you like evil? Well, I like Obama better than Bush. Bush only had the Iraq War and the Afghan War. All Obama did was have wars throughout his entire career, and he did a great job with Libya over there, the richest country in Africa that's now a hellhole. And the guy got, Gaddafi has to go, and I want that guy Assad out of there. And then it's one after another, and it just keeps going on. And the people, as you mentioned, we're divided. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights mean absolutely nothing. And the worst of this is about to come. When you said Hitler, think of how easily the masses marched off to their governors, their prime ministers, their chancellors, their presidents all over the world. We're fighting the COVID war. We're fighting the COVID war. We're fighting the COVID war. One of our covers in the Trends Journal was dumb enough to believe Bush's wars, and Anthony Frieda did a great cover with a Alfred E. Newman of George W. Bush, dumb enough to believe the COVID war. Look how the people marched off to the COVID war, obediently, just like they hailed Hitler. You were talking about Hitler, just as they marched off to Mussolini, just as they saluted Stalin. They're doing it again. And the people that are going down are using racial issues, gender issues, and any other issues that they can get to divide us. Here, let's make a point. And again, I'm a political atheist. Both political parties disgust me. I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate at 26 years old. I ran major political campaigns in Westchester County, the richest county in the world. Was chief government affairs specialist for the chemical industry. We know presidents, prime ministers, and princes. So I know what the deal looks like. So what do we have? We have a situation where we are going down so hard. So what do the political parties do? We're going to divide the people. I'm a Democrat. I'll tell you who I'm going to pick as my running mate. I'm going to be sexist and racist. I'm going to pick a black woman. Look, I'm in business over here. I could care if they're black, if they're white, if they're green, if they're yellow, if they're transgender. I could care less what color they are. I could care less what gender they are. You are being sexist and racist by, as I see it, by doing this right in front of everybody's eyes. And that's the way it's become. How about giving me, an American who pays taxes, and a lot of them, the best person to do the job? No, we're not going to do that at all. This is the new America with a K in it. It's the United Soviet States of America. That's the way I see it.
What is the solution from your perspective?
Oh, it's very simple. Look, there's a guy called Gary Null, who I was turned on to back in the 80s. And by the way, the first book I worked on was Natural Healing back in 1986. My friend Gary Abitelli turned me on to Gary Null. Boy, this guy taught me a lot. He taught me how to get in the best shape I could, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, to build myself as strong as I can and become a fighter. Not fight in the sense of a street fight, but if I have to, I will. I'm also a close combat guy. You know, I used to teach for many years at my own school. But I fight for my freedom. So what do? You become an American. You believe in what the Bill of Rights and the Constitution said. It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men since Samuel Adams. This is a time to unite for peace, liberty, love, joy, and beauty. Liberty, love, joy, and beauty sucked out of our life. Sucked out of our life. Hey, listen, all you young people. You get back in that classroom. You're not going to go out and party. And you, stop singing. You're not allowed to sing. You're spreading the virus. Oh, and you little kids, you little tiny kids over there, get a mask on. Get a mask on and get away from each other. All right? If we don't fight for our freedom, we are going to be living hell on earth. What do we do? Everybody listening, do what you can to support Progressive Radio Network, to get the word out, to unite for peace, prosperity, liberty, love, beauty, and joy, which these clowns don't have a clue about. Look at them. Look at their faces. Look at their actions. Do you think that they know how to live in love? Not even close. And again, we put out the Trends Journal. You get it. There's no magazine like it in the world. We tell you what's going on, what it means, and what's next so you can prepare. And that's what people need to do right now. They have to prepare for the future in a way like we've never seen before. But the biggest thing is we have to unite as Americans. And there's never been a better time, by the way, for a new third party than now. And I could give you two of the platforms, anti-tax and anti-vax. Here they are taxing, you know, you've been up to Kingston. I have those historic buildings, the most historic four corners in America. You know the taxes I pay? $126,000 a year. School taxes? Never had a kid. I'm paying all these school taxes. I'll pay some of them, but hey, now wait a minute. Your schools are closed. You're teaching from home. You don't need 25 first grade teachers. You need one. Why should I be paying all this maintenance in schools and janitors and all this other stuff if kids aren't going there? Cut my taxes. No, I lost my job. I this or that. No, cut my taxes. What to do? Now is the time for a new way, because if we keep the corruption, the murderers and thieves that are in charge now, again, it'll be hell on earth. So what could we do? This is a time for a new party, and not one and not one that already exists, not a Green Party, not a Yellow Party, not a Libertarian, a new party, a People's Party, a Freedom Party. That's the way I see it.
Good. Gerald, for many of us, we're concerned that New York City is going through a transformation, not necessarily a bad transformation in the long term, because for those of us who've been small little business people in New York City, we have been under the strong foot of landlords. They give no mercy. And before COVID, there was a 24% vacancy in all the boroughs. Now it's, the latest report said that 91% of all small restaurants, or all restaurants, period, in New York, couldn't even pay their August rent. That means they're going to go out of business. And that's before the winter comes. So I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing what's going to happen is the entire collapse of the real estate market, both commercial market, which is collapsing now, and the rental market. And over a period of 2 years, that collapse will not be reversed, but instead, young professionals and young working-class people can move, or anyone who's a working-class person can move back into the city because they'll be able to afford to, and therefore there'll be a whole rejuvenation of small businesses similar to what we had in New York in the crisis of the Abeam administration in the 1970s, where you'd have 10 small businesses on a block. Now we have a bank, a drugstore, and a mall store, and they're closing. So I see short-term enormous crisis, unparalleled. I see in the long-term, over the next 5 years, a rebuilding, but of a different type of system. No longer will you have one gigantic building complex like the big building complex in the 40s and 20s on 12th Avenue, or those mega buildings, Hudson Yards, because a Hudson Yards then has like 50 other small businesses that assume that they're going to make business with people who can afford whatever they're doing, and it's not working. So I see a whole different type of person living in New York, taking us back to the time when the average person could live in New York. Those are my thoughts. Tell us what you see for New York in the foreseeable future. Let's see the next 2 years.
Well, you nailed it perfectly. Again, back in March when this started happening, and again, you remember and you know the facts. Before this, going back to 2019, you go down the West Village, you go up to Fifth Avenue, you Park Avenue, Madison Avenue, for rent, all over the place. And then now you're looking at, we're talking about Hudson Yards with a $35 billion project, and it's a ghost town. There's going to be a collapse in the commercial real estate market unparalleled, and you are 100% right. One of the mistakes I've made over my 40 years in the career, I thought when things went down, they would stay down. They don't. They come back up. And you nailed it perfectly. It's going to be the 70s again. And there's also another element of that. You know, it was a loose time. People were having fun. It was wild. You're going to start seeing that kind of freedom start coming back again. But there's also going to be a real spike in crime. Because when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. So we're going to see that too. But over the long run, you are right on trend, as I see it, with the rebuilding of New York City in a way it used to be. And also other cities as well, Chicago, San Francisco, that became overtaken by that one type of dead zone type of vibe. It's going to bring back the, I left my heart in San Francisco for a good reason. It really used to be the place to be. And then it became geeked out. So yes, they're going to go down, but they're going to come back up.
Good. Also, finally, you predicted that gold was going to hit 2,000 and silver would go to 30. Silver came up to 28 and gold did hit 2,000. It's almost touching it right now. What do you see over the next 2 years?
Oh, I see. It all depends on the dollar. And the dollar, like gold is down today, gold's down back into the 1800s, high 1800s. I see gold $3,000 an ounce. I see silver well over $100 an ounce. All of the banks around the world, the only reason the dollar's up is because all the other currencies are so strong. We are in the greatest depression. Air travel's, it's only down 85%. The hospitality sector dead. Restaurant, you told you to talk about what's going on. And now winter's coming. This thing's going down big. All the countries are going to keep printing up all this digital money backed by nothing and printed on nothing. That's going to drive the prices higher of gold because their currencies are becoming worthless. And same too with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. The younger generation are going to move into that. Now, here's going to be the big flashpoint. They're going to come out with a new currency. You don't want to touch that dirty cash. You've only been touching it for centuries. We're not going to touch it anymore. You're going to get you sick. We're going to get rid of the dollar. We're going to come up with we'll make it up. So they're going to do away with the other currency so they wash off their debt falsely, and they're going to come out with something new. I don't give financial advice, gold and silver is the financial future for me because, again, all over the world, name the country, look at their currencies declining into garbage. They're making it up. They're just printing money to artificially boost their economy. And it goes back to the stock market. The stock market, again, all the facts are in the journal. They're all there. The Federal Reserve, the government are pumping in trillions of dollars to keep the equity markets higher. Not only because it's the 1% that owns 52% of the equity markets and 10% owns 88%. No, not because of only that. Because when the markets crash, then the average Joe on the street is going to know how bad it is. When the markets crash, then everybody that doesn't have a clue gets clued in. Because when the big one goes down, they know how bad it is going to be for them.
Well said. I would add this as a positive antidote. We are seeing millions of people, mainly people up to the age of about 50, now looking at rural America communities that are more sustainable to move to. And over the next 2 years, either by force, they have to because the jobs are gone where they're at, the higher cost of living where they're at that they can no longer maintain, because there's only two principles economically in life. You either have to keep making more money to support an artificial standard of living, which is always going to be one step ahead of your capacity to grow. As a result, we have 11 million millionaires. We have 17 million professional class. Put that together, add in their family, you're dealing with 70 million Americans. And whatever they're making, they're spending. They don't really have any savings. And when the equity market crashes, all their equity will crash with it. And as a result, we're going to see for the first time the largest proportion of bankruptcies in the professional market, because everyone who's got money wants to make more, unfortunately. At the other end of that, you can take the opposite approach, and that is you simply lower your cost of living, move to where you can afford that with a better quality of life aesthetically, more green time, a softer, smoother way of living. So you either reduce the cost of your living or you have to make more money to maintain it. And one is going to break people emotionally and financially. The other will give them a whole new way of living in a better environment, because right now walking down the streets of Manhattan is like walking down a dystopian town, much like when Denzel Washington is that one, the book of whatever it was, and he's walking in that dystopian town, and you think, wow. Have we become that? Yeah, we've become that. This is the part of The Purge that was a fictional movie about, you know, once a year everybody's allowed to go out and kill someone unless you're rich and powerful and you're not allowed to be killed. But that purge is not too far afield from what metaphorically, not physically, but metaphorically, people are so enraged by the displacement of values, the family values, which are now being denigrated, the solidity of community that once was important, that is being denigrated, everything for the group think. And so I see this happening in the United States. I see a breakdown and then a breakthrough. I see us going down, but not for the count. I see us going down and then stopping listening to the left and the right, stop making our arguments about race and ethnicity, and culture, but instead looking for that which unites us, looking for the best in human beings, and you will find it. And for those who don't want to participate, they can continue being what they've been, angry, lost fools. But I see that the people who've been sitting on the sidelines have had enough of all this, right or left, and so it will have to fall and collapse, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, those cities are, this is all happening now. But I see a movement towards rural America. I see more sustainability. I see people doing things with others, the we instead of me. Your final thoughts?
You hit it. You nailed it. Again, one of our trends was saying a new age 2.0. We're going to see a real new age movement happen. It happened, you talked about the 70s. That's when it really started to begin, when things really started going down and people started looking for the higher things in life. And then when the dot-com boom started, it was all forgotten. People started making money. All of a sudden, they're building McMansions. And now they have to simplify their lives and get back to the true meaning of life. And when you're talking about rural, you've been up here, Kingston, New York. Go to Bloomberg. Out of 181 cities in America, the prices have gone up the highest in real estate in Kingston. We're at the foothills of the Catskill Mountains. Now you have all that area up there that used to be the Borscht Belt that was weighed down before. People are going to be moving back up there, self-sustaining, learning how to live yourself without being on the grid like you used to be. And that's going to be big. And you're 100%, as I see it, on trend, because that's where we're seeing it as well.
Gerald, it's always nice speaking with you. Make time next month so we can spend another half hour together. All right?
Oh, I'd love to. And thank you for all that you do and everyone on Progressive Radio Network.
Well, you're on Progressive Radio Network, too. You preceded my show today, Wednesdays at 11 o'clock. Thank you very much, Gerald Salante, and Gerald's Trends Journal. If you want to be ahead of the curve, and progressivism means looking for the truth ahead of the crowd, Trends Journal will help you get to there. Thanks a lot.
Thank
Gerald
you.
Salante
Thank
from Kingston. And I remember when we had Ralph Nader and Cindy Sheehan and Robert Thurman, Gerald and myself, who founded, through Gerald, the Peace and Prosperity campaign to get people to look at the world in a peaceful eye, with diplomacy, with decency, with spirituality, and prosper to our needs but not to our excesses. So you only make what you need, and anything more you can help other people with. Didn't get the publicity. 1,200 of you showed up, and thank you. Finally, today, I want to mention that we're going to just to do a little brief fundraiser here for the station. All the funds go to the station. We have a special. We just got a new batch in today. Nitric cell stuff is called. This is one of the single most important things you can put in your body. In fact, when you have a glass of beet juice or pomegranate juice, you're getting nitric oxide, N-I-T-R-I-C. That's an essential molecule produced by all of our body's cells to increase blood circulation and to protect and relax blood vessels, thereby assuring the maximal delivery of nutrients throughout the body. So nitric cell stuff was formulated with scientifically supported foods that have the necessary compounds for cells' needs to make nitric oxide for maximal cellular performance. So that's what you get. But also today you're getting a very important documentary. It's an award-winning documentary called Detoxification Natural Approach. And I have some of the best minds in America in there showing people how you can detoxify. And even this morning, I get a call 3 o'clock in the morning. Man, that's what happens when you one of your best friends, they have a family member's having a problem, and suddenly they call you at 3 o'clock in the morning. I got a problem. Yeah, you do. Part of it's waking me up at 3 when I only sleep from midnight to 4. But be that as it may, now this person has to go through a complete detoxification, because when you get into an angst critical position, you need to detoxify your behavior, your emotions, your body. And so this documentary, Detoxification Natural Approach, helps get you there. It's a very, very important healing aid. And so here's the number you call to get your nitric cell stuff. And again, we're getting that second wave where ingredients are very difficult to get. And so I don't have a lot. I wanted to order 5,000 bottles. We got, I think, 1,000 or 1,500. And by the way, you have to understand, wherever I can get organic, I do. When I can't, because it's just not available, it's nowhere to be found, then I get the best I can to get the healthiest, the cleanest that is possible. In any case, this is really good stuff. For example, I blend in here beets, oat fiber, pomegranate, the cacao, which is a chocolate, organic chocolate, natural orange flavor, rice, grapes, blueberry, organic prune, goji berry, acai, stevia, rhubarb, spinach, kale, watercress, celery, cilantro, spirulina, lemons, grapefruit, orange, and watermelon. Now, all these have something in common. I just went to the USDA. What are the foods in order that have the highest amount of nitric oxide? And this is them. 500 grams, big jar. This is the superstar. This is the superstar of all the products I've created that can put this in your body. Maximal delivery. Very tasty. Delicious tasting. And it's yours. Let me give you the, and by the way, the value is $104.95. You save $44.99 today. You only pay $59.99. Let me give you the number. Call this number. Diane and Sandy are standing by. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And you can drop by the Vitamin Closet. We've moved the Vitamin Closet with Neil from 89th and Broadway down to our corporate headquarters on 35th Street. And he's there. We're open 7 days a week from noon to 8. And you can also call him. Let me give you his direct phone number. And he gives, you know, nice little discounts also and gifts. 646-926-5430. 646-926-5430. That's Neil. He's moved. And he, knowing that people have to go in to get that, he generally offers them a free video or something for the fact that they took their time to get there. That's our show today. Have a nice day, everyone.